This is Randy Rogel, writer of Batman and Animaniacs and other shows, calling out to you from Spoiler Country with Jeff Haas. And come watch the new Animaniacs show on Hulu, and make sure you get to see Animaniacs in concert when it gets to a theater near you. It's a delightful evening of fun and music and animation.
It's time to enter the Spoilerverse via our secret portal at the exclusive Arctic Club in beautiful downtown Seattle with our hosts, John and Kenrick and Jeff. Welcome to Spoiler Country.
Hey, if you're listening to our show for the first time and you're on one of the social medias that we're on, like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, any of those kinds of things, you should always check us out on Spoilerverse.com. But if you want to keep up with our latest episodes, you should bring out your smartphone, get into your favorite podcatcher, find Spoiler Country, and hit subscribe. Then you'll get all our new stuff.
And if you want to reach out to us, you can do that in two ways. You can call us, leave us a voicemail at 707-656-2080. Again, 707-656-2080. Or you can shoot us an email at spoilercountry@gmail.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back. I am Casey Allen. I am joined by my good buddy, Johnny Horsley.
Hey.
Hi. And you are listening to Spoiler Country. Today on the show, John, pretty stoked about this guy.
Yeah, man. So we heard about him way back when we talked to Rob Paulson. Rob talked about this guy a lot. And then we were able to get him, and Jeff the Get Haas sat down and chatted with the one, the only, the Randy Rogel.
Randy Rogel.
Yeah.
If you don't know who Randy Rogel is, you've heard his work. If you are a person in America, you have heard his work. If you're a person, I don't know, in the world,
yeah,
you've probably heard his work. He has done so many amazing songs and episodes of cartoons for Batman the Animated Series,
won an Emmy
for Animaniacs. Yep. He wrote the Yakko's World song. I mean, if nothing else,
I mean, I had to learn that song in school to learn all the countries of the world at the time.
So yeah. Randy Rogel, I can't wait to hear this guy. You guys check it out and tell us what you think.
Yeah, so let's take a listen to Randy in his own words, and then we'll come back here and talk some more.
Hello, listeners of Spoiler Country. Today on this very special show, we had the fantastic Randy Rogel. How's it going, Mr. Rogel?
Well, we have a global pandemic. I'm sorry to say, I live in California where we have fires ripping through everywhere, people having tough time to breathe. So it's all challenging, but you know, I think we live in a big, beautiful, wonderful world, and I'm busy with my normal writing and my composing. What I do is in television. I also do some theater because Warner Brothers has licensed a show of the songs I wrote that I do with Rob Paulson and oftentimes with, you know, the other cast members of Animaniacs, which include Maurice LaMarche, Tress MacNeille, Jess Arnell. And because of the pandemic, those were canceled for this summer. And now we're getting into fall. We've been booked again. Our next performance is supposed to be in Phoenix in February. That's been booked. So hopefully that means people are having confidence that this pandemic will be slowing down and things can return to normal. But in the meantime, I've been doing most of my writing and I am composing for the new Animaniacs show and for several other projects, mostly in television. So that's what I'm up to. Jeff, thank you for asking.
So with the show coming back on during obviously the pandemic, how is the pandemic affecting the dynamics of the concert?
Well, it's not affecting our concert, because the concert's great. What it affects is people's ability to go into a theater. Same thing with sporting events and restaurants and things, because, you know, people just can't gather in close-knit, you know, get together in close-knit gatherings. So, you know, the theaters doing the right thing had to stop all performances until we can get through the pandemic, come up with a vaccine or a cure of some sort. So it just put everything on hold. Basically, it's the same thing on Broadway. I was talking to a very close friend today, and she's, you know, a big Broadway star, and everything has come to a stop, you know, for them. Nobody's able to, you know, to do their jobs. Also in theaters around the country. So it's hit them pretty hard. So that's really, you know, we actually did do a concert. We're represented by ICM, and they had suggested doing a concert on a venue called Looped Live. And we did it about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it went very, very well. But basically you do the concert from, you know, Rob and I did the concert, and then it was, you know, sent out through loop.com's platform all over the country, all over the world. We had people in Saudi Arabia watching. We had people in London. We did a meet and greet after with several, as many as we were able to do. And that went very well. But, and so I was actually pleased. I thought, well, this is actually a pretty cool little venue, but there's nothing like doing it live in theater where people get to come and actually meet you in person, and we get to meet them in person. So hopefully that'll be happening again soon. But the show's ready to go, and it's really a wonderful show if you haven't had a chance to see it yet. It's called Animaniacs in Concert.
I have heard of it. I'm actually from Rhode Island, so unfortunately I don't think you guys have made it to my area yet, I don't think.
No, we've been to Boston and New York, that area. We went up to Vermont, I think, once. It was just north of New York, but we definitely need to make it to your state, Jeff.
Yes, you definitely do. See, the thing about Rhode Island you have to understand is that anything beyond 15 minutes is basically an all-day journey from our perspective. So Boston might as well be in, like, Florida.
Yeah, exactly. No, we'll come right into it. Where are you in Rhode Island? Are you in Providence?
I'm in Warwick, which is two cities over from Providence.
Sure. Well, I'm sure they're going to be booking us on tours up there, and it'll be great to meet you, and the fans will love the show. It's really true. I mean, we've been doing it all over the country now. I mean, we've been to Hawaii, too. And I think I had it booked up in Mexico, too, but mostly it's in the continental United States. And we've been Atlanta, Denver, Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco. I mean, all over the country. We've been Oklahoma, Florida. So the show's really picked up a lot of steam. And people will enjoy it. What's nice about it, too, is you don't really have to know Animaniacs in order to enjoy the show, because it's just a lot of the funny songs and the stories behind them. And then, of course, these unbelievably talented voiceovers. You know, when I have Rob, you know, all the voices they can do. Marie, when I have Maurice there, we have Pinky and the Brain now in the house. Yeah. Ad-libbing, and, you know, with, like, Tress McNeil, who's done, what, 100 episodes of The Simpsons, and she's a regular in Futurama. They break into all those different favorite voices, you know, from all animation. So it's really quite a fun show.
It sounds that when we do interviews, or prior to our interviews, we always do research on our guests. And I was going through the information on Animaniacs in Concert, and it just looks hilarious. And I wanted, you know, when you watch the clips, you want to be there and listen to the stories, and you want to listen to the music that you guys have, because Animaniacs has some classic pieces of music, and often those pieces are yours.
Well, thanks. And it does turn into a musical concert, but between them all, there's story. And then we do things like, we say, you want to hear a song that they wouldn't let us do? You know, a song that got cut, or a song that Steven Spielberg said, we're not doing that song. You know, we could actually, you know, because it's a concert venue, we can say, here, you want to hear the original lyrics to the song before they made me change them? So it's sort of the story behind how things get made. And for that reason, it's really a fun experience for the audience.
Is there a favorite song that did get cut that you're basically dying to now perform in these concerts?
Well, actually, there is. And when you come to see the concert, you'll hear it. I say, here's the original song, and then here's the song we end up doing. Oh, yeah, the audience is really, you know, they really respond to that.
That is so awesome. Like I said, Animaniacs was one of those shows that was so important to my growth growing up. It was basically one of the must-watch programs for me in my early teen years.
Well, that makes me feel very good. And we were just trying to entertain you.
Well, you definitely did. And I think one of the interesting things about you and looking at your background is that you're both a writer and you've written some of my favorite shows on TV, including Batman the Animated Series. And also, just briefly, you also wrote my favorite episode of Mighty Max, which was big for me when I was little as well. And you also obviously are a composer and a lyricist. So which part of you came first, the lyricist or the writer?
Well, that's an interesting question, Jeff, because I grew up as a little kid. I broke into theater at an early age, and I just got exposed, and it was professional theater, so I got exposed to a lot of really great performers and, you know, real pros. And then also I got exposed to really good material, you know, just great writing, great composing. So I think I just was exposed to some of the great composers, because if you listen to my songs, you know, they kind of come from that classic style, or those standards styles, or Broadway. And then when I got out of high school, I, you know, for some inexplicable reason, I wanted to go to West Point. You know, someone had talked to me about the academies, and so I didn't quite understand the military side of it. But, you know, you have to compete to get in there. You know, you have to get a senator or a congressman to send you. So when I ended up going to West Point, that was completely divorced from anything to do with theater or entertainment. It was, you know, you're studying to be a military officer, and everything is physics and chemistry, mathematics, engineering. Everybody graduated, at least when I went, with an engineering degree. That was when I went, women were not yet permitted to go into the academy. And so it was just really hardcore, you know, based in the sciences. I think they've gotten much better than that now. But I didn't intend to make the military my career. And so when I got out, I just needed a job. And I got picked up by one of those Fortune 500 corporations. It was Procter & Gamble. Then they recruited me over to a company called Digital. And so I was working sort of in corporate life, but I always had wanted to be working in film and television. But wherever I went, Jeff, I always had, you know, rented a piano, and I would always love playing music and songs. And I think that's what affected me. So when I came down to LA, you know, I wanted to work in as an actor and maybe as a writer. I mean, I was known more as an actor, but I always thought I was a pretty good writer. And I started writing scripts, and that's what broke in, you know, that's what kind of hit. And then I ended up being brought in by Warner Brothers onto the Batman series, that animated series. At that time, I didn't know anything about animation, so I had to quickly learn how that works. And that show was just a breakout show. It was great writing for it. Some of the talent on it. I was working for Alan Burnett. Bruce Timm was running, you know, all the visual side of it in production. And Eric Radomski, they did all the original character design. So I was working with some really terrific people and great writers, too. Go ahead.
I'll say it's incredible when you drop the name of West Point, the academy that has the legacy of having, was it Ulysses S. Grant, General Pickett, Robert E. Lee at that school. I mean, that's a hell of a legacy to be a part of.
Well, good for you for knowing that. I mean, you know, Eisenhower graduated from that, Patton graduated, Omar Bradley, George Marshall. I mean, it's really a school for soldiers. And in fact, you know, there's an interesting little anecdotal outcrop of this. Is that when I went to West, I graduated from West Point in 1976. West Point was created in 1802 by then President Thomas Jefferson.
Nice.
Was going on the advice of former President George Washington, who said, we need a school for soldiers that's home, you know, we have to have homegrown American officers, because all the officers in the American Revolutionary War were European trained. They were on Napoleonic tactics. And so wanted to have a, so, I mean, I know those are some big names to drop, aren't they? But
yes,
in West Point's existence since its creation in 1802, there was a class we all studied, we all learned about. It was called the class that stars fell on, because so many of them became generals. And of course it was Eisenhower's class, which I think was like 1915 or so. No, these are the guys who were generals in World War II, you know, who ran World War II.
Yeah.
And so many of them ascended because of the war to become, and a huge number of them were general officers. So they were called the class that stars fell on. Well, now there's a new class that stars fell on. And they have more generals than Eisenhower's class. And my class. My class is the class of 76. We had Stan McChrystal, who ran the war in Afghanistan. We had Ray Odierno, who ran the war in Iraq. We have so many general officers. And then even David Petraeus. But David was 2 years ahead. David used to haze my class. He was the class of 74. But, you know, he went on to great. So it's really surprising me. Like, if I go back to reunions, I'm running into classmates who are these big generals running wars. And I knew them when we were just plebes running scared and getting yelled at.
I mean, when you're hanging around these people and yourself as well, can you sense an individual that is going to go on to greatness? I mean, and for you as well, I mean, is there something about the aura around you guys that is different maybe than some others?
You know, Jeff, maybe with some people, but mostly I would say no, because I'm a little older than you. So I can look back at who was then the big dog around and who became the big guy. There were a couple of people I really thought were going to become big generals, and they didn't. And a lot of guys that were kind of the quiet guys or just sort of the average guys ascended to great heights, and not just in the military, but in academia. One of the guys I know, he became multi-millionaire. And another friend of mine, a guy named Bob Coker, who was just one of our classmates, a good guy. But Bob, I mean, he had a career in the military and he did fine. He got out, but he was one of the people who came up first with facial recognition, and he owns 8 companies now, flies his own jet. And so you just never know. I was thinking, oh God, you know, this person landed there, that person landed there. I always had an interest in theater, but I don't know if anybody ever thought I would, you know, end up working as, you know, as a professional in Hollywood. I do know I got a letter from West Point, and they did an article on me, and they said, yes, I'm officially the only West Pointer who's ever won an Emmy. So I thought, okay, I have one unique distinction in there with him. But no, I and you'll find this out. I don't, how old are you, Jeff? Can I ask?
I'm about to turn 41.
Oh, okay. You're middle aged, but I'm thinking for people out there in the spoiler country, you know, listening to podcasts, for those of you who are 17, 18, or in your early 20s or whatever, you know, there's a lot of people you think aren't going to go anywhere that will. And a lot of people you think, wow, that's a real mover and shaker, that don't. It's a little, you know, a little hard to tell where people are going to land. That's why you should be nice to everybody.
and it's also a great lesson for these kids to hear. I mean, my day job during the day, anyways, I'm a high school English teacher for a therapeutic high school. Uh-huh. And all my students have different issues. Usually it's anxiety, sometimes it's autism, other things of that nature. And a lot of them probably do have the sense that they're not going to go anywhere because of these struggles that they have now. I think it's a good lesson for them to hear that they are going to have potential later on to become still great, regardless of where they're starting now.
You know, it really is true, because it is important, of course, to learn as much you can, to develop your skills, to develop your education, all of, you know, develop your tools. But what's also important is to apply yourself. And if you persevere, if you throw yourself at something, you get yourself out of bed every day and get up early and start working towards, set goals for yourself, where you will achieve them. Those are the kind of people who really get ahead. There's very few people who just, you know, lay on the couch and suddenly fortune and fame find them. It's hard work, but it's a fun journey. So I would tell all of them, no matter where you are, no matter where you are in the spectrum, who you are, all of those opportunities are out there, at least in our society, I think, that if you want it bad enough, you can go get it.
Well, like, if you ever have some free time and you want to talk to some kids and need to hear some good news at a high school, please come talk to my kids. They would love probably to talk to you.
I would be very happy to do that. And I can certainly tell them from my own experience, you know, when I first got to Hollywood, I like to say I know every door in Hollywood, because they were all slammed in my face. Where's your directing degree? Where's your acting writing degree? I go, well, no, I have an engineering degree from West Point. It's like, what the hell? What have you had produced? Nothing. You know, you just have to pursue. You know, look at a guy like Rob Paulsen. Rob, you know, was a big star and one of the primo voice actors. You know, he developed this throat cancer. And he called me to tell me, hey, you know, I got that it might affect our concerts, you know. I got to tell you, never once in all the time he went to that treatment did I ever hear Rob complain once. I never heard him say, woe is me. It was always telling me how brilliant the doctors were. But, you know, we had this talk. Rob wasn't in the military, but he's a big proponent of the, you know, he's developed a whole charity for wounded warriors, you know, directs many of that. So he's got a lot of respect for the military. So I put it in those terms where I said, Rob, this is the hill you have to take. He said, aye, aye, Captain. And he did it. You know, he just applied himself. He did all the stuff he did, and he is completely cancer free. And he's now been, he took over Michael Douglas's role as the spokesman for, you know, the American Cancer Society. I don't know if that's the exact name, but you know, that group that represents cancer patients. And Rob can now go and talk to them and say, I know exactly what you're going through because I went through it too. You know, it's just how you approach your life. You can look at it with pessimism or woe is me, or you can look at it as an opportunity and a chance to grow and a chance to make life better, not just for you, but for other people. So it's just a choice you make.
So would you say, this might be a tough question, do you think perseverance is more important than talent?
Well, that, you know, Jeff, that is the $64,000 question. I have seen people who have a lot of talent who don't go anywhere. It's because they just don't apply themselves. And then I've seen other people who work so hard at it that they really do develop those skills. It didn't come as naturally to them. They had to work harder to get it. But generally, if you're going to apply yourself and you surround yourself with capable people, you know, you take the lessons, you study what it is, and you work at it hard enough, you're going to get a real working ability. Will you be Mozart? And probably, I don't know. You know, you probably can't do that, but you can become a brilliant musician. You know, are you going to become Isaac Newton? No, but maybe, but you'll become an absolutely brilliant physicist or what, you know, from whatever you do. And you will have a good life. You will have a good career. And sometimes like me, you know, you find a career in another place. You know, here I am going with military, I'm corporate life. And I really found my joy and my passion in Hollywood and now in writing. You know, I mean, I do write lots of scripts, but now I do tons of music, working on a Broadway show now. And it's funny to me to look at it and go, how did I end up here? You know, you just follow where life takes you. It's kind of like Forrest Gump. You know, you're the feather wherever you land, just do the best job you can do wherever you land.
That's fantastic. And I think I always tell my students that everything you do helps you better in the thing you want to do. And being from West Point and obviously later being a writer and a composer, are there skills you learned from West Point that you're now utilizing in a way maybe you didn't even expect in these other areas?
You're asking some really great questions, Jeff. Oh. Yeah, the answer is absolutely yes. One thing that if I had to say the one thing at West Point, I mean, it gives you a solid foundation in the arts and science. You get a good education. But what they teach you, maybe sort of this military thing, it's to be a self-starter. It's to get off your butt and make it happen. You know, take control, seize the situation and you know, take control of your life and take control, you know, get yourself up and get going in the morning. You know, you say, oh, God, I don't want to ride my bike for, you know, 2 hours this morning, but I got to do it. You know, I've got to go run or exercise or study this thing. The other thing is everything you learn informs you. You know, if you're a high school student out there right now and you're thinking, what do I need to take this history class for? Because I am not going to be a history teacher. I don't give a damn about history. But what you will find to your surprise is somewhere along the path of your life, it will pay off. That's the whatever information you got there will inform you. It helps create the person you are and helps guide you down other paths. So don't poo-poo anything you're learning. It all goes into the mix. And at the end of the day, it makes up who you are and what opportunity, not the opportunities you're going to get, but the opportunities when they present themselves, you can take advantage of the opportunity because you're prepared.
See, you're actually a perfect spokesperson for education. We got to put you like on a loop right in my classroom to say that over and over again.
Well, I like to say, you know, it's funny because I was writing all these funny songs for Animaniacs, but they were education. You know, like I would do songs on geography,
yeah,
or I would do songs on, you know, on history or something like that. I do remember I got a nice pat on the back from Gene McCurdy, who was the president of Warner Brothers Animation. You know, she sat on top of all those shows at Warner Brothers back in that golden era. And we were writing Animaniacs and Batman and all that during the 1990s. And there was a Republican revolution that happened, and they took control of the Senate. It was under Newt Gingrich, I remember. I don't know if you're old enough to remember this. Maybe you are.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like 94, if you remember that.
With Bob Dole as well, yeah.
Yeah, Bob Dole, right. And so they came, and actually I kind of agreed with them on this. They came and they started looking at television. They said, hey, you know what? You guys, we've granted you all these licenses to be doing these shows, you know, these networks and these studios, but you're supposed to be doing educational stuff for the kids too, not just trying to sell toys, you know? And well, people had gotten away from that. So everybody, you know, people were doing the superhero shows or the little, you know, kid on the playground shows and all that. But where's the education? And, you know, you guys are on the hook for that. You were supposed to be making some educational content. So Gene went and grabbed the songs from Animaniacs and took says, look, we're teaching the countries of the world. We teach from the states. And they went, now that's what we're talking about. Now, that's not why I was doing it. I was just doing it to crack you up, you know.
But
she came back. She says, oh, my God, it's a good thing you did those songs because that helped us to show that we're doing something educational. I said, oh, well, good. That wasn't what I was trying to do, but I'm glad it helped.
Well, like I said, I have a bunch of questions for Animaniacs, but I did have one question because it is one of my favorite shows. Was your first writing credit the Mighty Max show on Day of the Cyclops?
Yeah, my first one, I did that one, but I think the first one I did was a Sonic the Hedgehog.
Okay.
I think I did one of those. I'm not sure what it was, but very quickly after I did Mad Max, I did a couple of them or Mighty Max, but then right after that, Warner Brothers picked me up for Batman. And then I had to sign an exclusive contract, Jeff, which meant I was not permitted to write for other studios or shows without permission, because then, you know, you're writing for their competitors. So right after that, I was strictly at Warner Brothers on, you know, Batman, Pinky and the Brain, Animaniacs, Hysteria, those shows.
Well, you're writing for Batman animated series. You wrote some of my favorite episodes of all time, even as, and I think maybe it's definitely to your credit as an adult. Like I said, I'm about almost 41 years old. I can watch the Batman animated series episodes and they still can reach me at this age, and I can still feel that it's not being talked down to. There's not a feeling I'm watching a kid show. It really does feel like a show that even an adult can truly appreciate. Your episodes were some of the best for that.
Well, thank you. I really credit Alan Burnett with that. Alan was the show. You know, if you don't know Alan, you definitely should have him.
He was on the show about 4 months ago.
Okay, great. Then show you. So just so you know, Alan's the godfather. Alan created a lot of, you know, Alan taught me to write. He taught, Bob Goodman was Alan's secretary there. He came in, he wanted to be a writer. You know, and Bob went on to create his own. He created Zeta. He wrote on Superman. Then he left, and then he was on Warehouse 13. Then he did Elementary. Now he's, you know, he's running big television shows. And he was one of Alan's proteges too. And Alan brought a sensibility. This is very important for a showrunner, because the showrunner runs the writer's room, sort of the vision of the show. But in the case of animation too, he works very closely with people like Bruce Sim of what the look and the feel of the show is going to be too. Well, in live action, they do that as well. So I remember when we came on board, Alan wanted to do real, like little mini movies that were real stories that, just like you say, Jeff, they didn't talk down to kids. And we did have to deal with a little bit of that with that, because it was kids show at first, and they'd say, hey, can you work this new bat cycle into your episode, you know, because we want to say, and Alan would say, no, it doesn't fit in this, but we'll do another episode later that maybe you can use it. So he really kept the quality of the show, and he got all the writers writing in the same direction. So I was surprised, to tell you the truth, Jeff, when we were, the show came out with such a big hit, that the audience skewed much higher as well. It wasn't just kids your age, right? But we were getting people. I remember Howard Stern on the radio at that time. He used to watch the Batman, and he'd be talking about the episode. I thought, God, Howard Stern's a grown man. You know, we appealed to, you know, people in, you know, certainly late teens, early 20s, but all the way up into full adults. And I considered that a real compliment, that a show could do that. And you're right, it still holds up because of that vision. It wasn't, you know, some silly, you know, childishly written little cartoon, it had a lot of meat to it, and a lot of really deep stories and underlining thematic messages that worked very well too, I thought.
Yeah, once again, one of your episodes, the double Two-Face episode, where you went over to the origin of Two-Face, that dealt with some really adult themes. I mean, it was very layered, and like I said, the issues with Harvey Dent and his wife, the issue with the mob, the issue with his schizophrenia, those are really adult. I mean, even having discussing talking to a therapist. As a writer, was there ever a concern when you're writing it that that there's a line you're getting too adult for the kids?
Yeah, you're hitting actually on a pretty cool point for me in my genesis as an animation writer, because when I was starting out in Hollywood, I was writing shows for live action. I remember I was writing spec scripts for Coach and Roseanne and at the time Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. So when I got into animation, to understand how you write for that was different, and I had written some spec scripts. And I remember I wrote a couple of really great scripts that, you know, to sort of show how I could do it. And God, those scripts should be done now. But Alan had read them, and so he liked them. He brought me, he said, look, I'll tell you what. He says, I don't have room on my staff for you. I'm full up, but I like your scripts. I'll tell you what, I have an outline I've written. So I'm going to take the story credit, but why don't you write the script, and then you'll take the screenplay credit? And I said, well, yeah, hell yes. And that was Two-Face, the first episode. So that was my first script for Batman. And so he gave me a pretty cool little outline. And from that, I've forged ahead and crafted the script from that. And you're right, he had some pretty cool ideas in that. And the therapist, I believe, was his idea. I remember as I was writing, it was such a good outline that, you know, all these wonderful ideas were coming to me. And I wasn't limited, I think, by writing for animation, Jeff. So I just wrote it like real live action. Like I would have written a, you know, Quentin Tarantino script, and he had to calm it down. He had to come, he says, no, you can't. I remember I had one time where I had Batman like up on a building on a gargoyle, right? And yeah. I did what you call a helicopter shot, you know, where the helicopter goes around Batman, you're getting all the city, right? Alan looked at me, he said, you can't do that. I said, why not? He said, those are animating backgrounds. I said, what's that? Because that shot would cost us $1 million. They have to draw every one of those scenes. See, now in CGI, of course, you can do that. I went, oh. Right, right. I said, I didn't know that. So he's educating on animation. But I went back to him after the first one went into production, and it was doing very well, and people liked it. And I said, hey, because it was Two-Face, he said he made it a two-parter, you know?
Yeah.
And so we had a cliffhanger at the end of the first one. So I said, hey, do you have an idea for the second, you know, the second episode? And he goes, no, I don't actually. I said, well, I do. He said, well, what is it? So I told him. He said, yeah, I really hate that. I said, well, what about this? I had another day. He goes, well, now that I like. And then, you know, that's when he said, tell you what, I'm going to put you on my staff. And he brought me in on staff after that. But I remember there was this really cool moment that at first they weren't going to let us do it, but Harvey flips that coin to figure out what to do. Two-Face, he flips this coin. So his life's on this sort of arbitrary edge. And at this point, because of the girl, all of the angst that he's going through, when he flips that coin for Batman, you know, the next one is the chest of all the gold, all the coins they've stolen. Batman hits it, knocks over. So when it lands, the coin lands and all that, and he can't figure out which one is his coin. And he just goes completely berserk and apeshit, you know, and screaming and yelling. And at first they were thinking, we can't do this. But Richard Mall, I remember, did that. He did it so well that they kept it in. And I was always, you know, very pleased with how that episode came out.
Yeah, it was such a brilliant episode. And like I said, I had them all on DVD, and I do go back every so often and rewatch them. And obviously, Two-Face is one of the ones I definitely go back to. Another show of yours, episode of yours I go back to, I know your story credit, was Tiger, Tiger, based on the William, which to me, I thought it was based on the William Blake poem, at least the title was.
Yeah.
Did you think of the poem first and then write the story, or did you write the story and go, hey, you would be a great poem to line this up with?
It came, but I can't take credit for that. That was Michael Reeves. Michael was a story editor, and that was one of the initial ideas, you know, beat sheets he came up with, and also kind of the Island of Dr. Moreau idea with it too. And Mike was very, very well read, very literate kind of guy. You know, it's sad Mike got Parkinson's and he's not doing well anymore. But at that time, you know, that was sort of a very hip reference. And so I was brought on to, you know, write that, you know, with Mike as Michael as my story editor. Hey, by the way, you know, one of the things I'm really proud of, if you had a chance to see it, it's a Batman movie that I did with Boyd Kirkland.
Sub-Zero?
It was called Sub-Zero. Yeah. And that I had, you know, much more time to tell the story with that. And I always thought that was a pretty cool little movie, at least, you know, of course, that's my opinion, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Batman Sub-Zero, once again, I watched that movie as well growing up. I thought that was a great movie. And especially there was a lot of expectation on that movie because it followed up from Batman Mask of Phantasm, which also, once again, was a phenomenal movie. And I think it did a great job of continuing this story of Batman. Like I said, I think it was brilliant. And I do want to point out that Tiger is a story that when I read the poem with my students, I do put on the clip with Batman reciting the poem at the end, because it really is good.
Oh, that's great. Oh, thank you. That makes me feel good.
No problem. You also wrote, once again, I mean, there's so much to talk about. I know you said we said 30 minutes, but if you don't mind, I got a few more questions.
Yeah, let's go like 5 or 10, and then I have to run if that's okay with you.
Yep, no problem. Tell you what, I'm going to ask one quick question about Robin's Reckoning, because once again, you won an Emmy for that one.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, when you were writing that, did you have in mind the eventual evolution from Robin to Nightwing if the show kept going?
No, not at that point. We were just doing the origin story, and I worked with Alan on that because he said, yeah, we have to do this origin story. So the Nightwing came later. Now, I think, did Nightwing already exist in the comic book universe? I think it may have.
Yes.
So, yeah. So that, I mean, that was something for later incarnations. With the first series of, I remember we wanted to have Batman and then some Robin. And so we could do some strictly Batman shows and Robin. So what Alan did was he put Dick off at college. And then he would come home. So that way, if we were doing an episode without Dick there, you know, there was a reason he wasn't there. He was off at college. And then we could bring him back. But then we wanted to do kind of a flashback of what created him. And so that's where Robin's Reckoning came from. And it had also been dealt with to some extent in the comic book universe, you know, with his parents being carnival performers and all that. We took it from there. But we did change some of the names. We added a little bit of it our own. But the basic idea was from, you know, who had created a comic book series.
Well, that might have been my favorite episodes of Batman. It might have been Robin's Reckoning, because once again, it was just so brilliant. It delved deeply into Robin as a character who, in the comic books for a long time, was a bit of a joke, and you took the character very seriously and kind of evolved into being a more serious adult character that you could accept.
And you're right. And I'm sorry. Please continue.
No, go right ahead.
Well, I was going to say, what I really liked about, you know, as a writer, you can write a good story, but you always begin looking for thematic underpinnings to make the story go from good to great. And I remember at the end, Robin finally catches Tony Zucco, and he's going to kill him. You know, drop the bill, and Batman stops him. You know, when Batman gets her, he goes, don't do it. He goes, and Robin's basically saying, how the hell could you possibly understand how I feel? And then he realizes what he just said. You know, of course, Bruce Wayne would understand how he feels, because the same thing happened to him. But the point that Bruce makes to him, which is a good message to get to the kids, is, do you want to become the thing that you hate?
Right. So
you drop him off that building, then you enter his world, you become him. And that's what makes us different. That's why, you know, because if you think about Batman, he's a vigilante. He's outside the law. He's a lawbreaker. And so, and we don't want people taking the law in their own hands. But what makes it work is, at least when I would, you know, I would never want to have Batman, you know, running up on the steps of City Hall in the middle of the day. He's a creature of the night. And the only reason he goes out is he goes out to places that the police can't go. Because they're, you know, because of rules of evidence, or Sergeant Caesar. So he can deal with the bad guys on his own terms, but he has this moral code he superimposes over himself of lines that he won't cross. And that message gets put across to Robin. So it took a much deeper meaning there, and a pretty good message too, to our audience.
Like I said, I think it was brilliant. It was a brilliant episode. And I also, when you mentioned this, when Robin says, how can you know? To me, it was such a perfect teenager comic. Teenagers always seem to have that idea that you can't, adults can't possibly know what I'm feeling right now. And Batman totally did. And it was just brilliant of yours to put that in. Because because we're low on time, I do want to move on to Animaniacs real quick. Sure. Though I would like to talk about Batman Forever, but we'll move on. Once again, as you mentioned earlier, one of the best, most famous segments from Animaniacs is Yakko's World, which is taught in geography classes all the time and shown and is brilliant. I heard a rumor that it came to you while teaching your son geography. Is that true?
That's absolutely true. My mother, had bought him one of those globes. You know, all of us as kids, or you see them in your schoolrooms, you know, that little globe that's on the stand that, you know, that every kid gets, or it's in every schoolroom. So she bought him one of those, and I was sitting on the couch with him, and I was showing, okay, well, here's United States, Canada, Mexico, Panama. You know, and as I was doing it, I thought, I wonder if that could be a song. that sort of gave me the impetus to try to do it. And then when I was on Batman trying to break into Animaniacs, I thought, you know, I wonder if this song would be a fun little cartoon, you know, like an animated cartoon kind of. And so that's when I, you know, really refined it and wrote it out and all that. And then, of course, Tom Ruger liked it and he showed it to Steven Spielberg and he liked it. So then they came back and said, well, do another one. Do the stage to the Capitol. Yeah, so that's how it started happening. And then finally, I got a piano rolled into my office with a little note from Steven Spielberg saying, okay, I didn't know what I wanted to do with the show, but now I do. You know, you're going to be my little Gershwin. It'll be a Tin Pan Alley up here. And I thought, okay, great. And so that's what it turned into.
That is awesome. And did you know at the time it would be proved so popular that I think you guys even did an updated version of the Countries of the World? I think, I don't know, was it 5-10 years ago with Rob Paulson?
Well, what happened is when we do the concerts, Rob, you know, Rob, as well as Jess and Tress and Maurice Noble, they do lots of, you know, public appearances. They go to all the Comic Cons and all that. They're constantly at those. So Rob and I are, you know, we're friends too. We're not just colleagues. We know each other as friends. So one day he told me, he said, you know, everybody always asked me to sing those songs of his. I went, oh, that's great. That's great, right? So at one point he told me, one guy said, hey, that song's outdated now because the Soviet Union fell. You know, and Rob goes, oh, yeah, will you try writing this? So I said, well, no, he's right. He's actually right. So I thought, I'm going to sit down and I'll write another verse that updates the song to show all the new countries that have come into being or gone not being since I wrote the song to begin with. And so we do that. Rob does that as an encore. After we do the show at the end, we're taking, you know, people want more. He does an encore. He says, well, I'm going to show you that, you know, we'll do Yakko's World with the additional verse. And so that's where that came from.
That is awesome. So Animaniacs is coming back to Hulu. Are you going to be a part of the new show?
I am. Yes, I'm not on staff. I'm doing other things, but I have written several songs for the show and I just finished two new ones. And Wellesley Wild is running the show. Wellesley came from Family Guy. So he's got that real edge sensibility. And so the show's going really well. I mean, the first two seasons are going to be available. I think it's November 12th or 16th. Check your Hulu channel. But those two seasons will be released. And so whether there'll be a third season, I know they're trying to anticipate it right now. So we're, you know, doing some writing. But, you know, you still need to get the green light on that. And I think part of that's because of the pandemic, when can production go back in and all that. But everything is going through those first two seasons. Steven's very pleased with them. The studio's pleased with them. So I can't see why they wouldn't want to do more.
Are they bringing back the classic characters, like Pinky and the Brain will be back and some on all the other classic characters?
I do know Pinky and the Brain will be back. And the Warners, they created some new franchises and some of the old ones they didn't use. So I'm not sure because I've been writing the scripts for them. So I'm not really sure which new ones they have, which old one. But I do know Rob and Maurice are back to Pinky and the Brain, and that Rob and Tress and Jess are back as the Warner Brothers character, as, you know, the Warner kids.
Well, like I said, I'm for one, can't wait to watch them. I've been looking forward to, I mean, just when I heard about Animaniacs, I've been wanting to watch it since I've heard about it. It's going to be a great show. I get the feeling because the original was so classic, in my opinion. I did hold you for a while. So I do want to thank you very much for sitting with me and talking. I know how busy you are.
Well, thank you. It's been a real pleasure. And by the way, the new show, Steven Spielberg is producing it again.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to have
Spielberg. So, you know, he brings quality. So,
I'd love to have Spielberg on the show, but I don't think he's listening after me.
probably not to get Steven. He's too busy, but I'm sure he'd be flattered that you'd want to. But hey, what a joy to talk to you, Jeff. And I look forward to meeting you in person when we get the show to Rhode Island. And to all you spoiler content country podcast fans, it's been great speaking with you today, and what a lovely opportunity this has been for me.
And for me as well.
And we're back. You know, I'm looking at the list of songs that Randy wrote for Animaniacs right now, and that dude wrote Yakko's World, Yakko's Universe, Wacko's America, the I'm Cute song that Dot sings. He wrote Be Careful What You Eat, The Presidents, and I mean, he wrote so many of the songs that I know and still sing in my head with my kids all the time. So that dude is insane. I'm just writing the songs and on the shows he's done, and I mean, he's done some amazing stuff. And it's, if you want to hear a fun story about Randy, go back, listen to our Rob Paulson episode. And he tells a fun story about Randy coming over from Batman over to Animaniacs. And it's a good one.
I have so much space in my head devoted to songs from Animaniacs.
As you should.
should probably be filled with something else.
It's fine.
But it's Animaniacs and Simpsons references.
Right.
And so,
I like the fact that Ennis is
not
back.
How to properly file taxes and, you know.
You have CPAs for that shit.
Equations. And, yeah.
Yeah. I mean.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed the hell out of that interview, man. Jeff is killing it on interviews. And, but I think we got a good team, John.
Dude, we got the best team in showbiz right here, man. We got the best team of interviewers and people on there. As you know, I don't do very many interviews, but I do them every now and then. But you guys are great with the interviews, and we got a great team on the website. And I honestly am legit excited for every time I work on our show and work on the website, because I just love what we do.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, man. I was not expecting to be as involved as I am. but I love every minute of it. It's super fun.
Dude, I mean, back when you first messaged me on Instagram, after the show first came on the air, and you were like one of our first listeners you were the first listener that reached out on the show, period. And it's just crazy how we moved from that to you writing some articles, to you doing some stuff on the website, to then coming on and doing interviews, because you keep on bringing us people to now. It's like, I couldn't imagine the show moving forward without you and without Jeff and without Melissa. It's like all three of you guys have come on and just had such a big impact to the show and to the website.
Yeah. I've, the stuff that I do is minimal compared to what Jeff and Melissa have been doing, especially lately. Oh my goodness. And, on the website, we have Robert, host of, Bridging the Geekdom and, Shooting the Sith.
Yep.
He has been doing so much for the website. Oh my goodness,
dude! That guy he does so much work. He's busting his butt. He's also been a big help to the growth of not only our show but all the shows in the network and the website.
Yeah, totally. So, I think you guys have assembled a good team, man.
I sure hope so, man. But, you know, and I hope it keeps happening. And Randy, I appreciate you coming on the show. It was awesome. If you ever want to come back on the show, let us know. We'd be happy to have you come back on. You know, either you can talk with Jeff again, or you can talk with somebody else, and it'd be a whole new experience, because like a whole new podcast, a different interviewer. But I think with all of that wrapped up, that's a show, man. And if you're listening out there, if you liked that show and what you just heard, you know, go to spoilerverse.com. Check out all the back issues. I'm going to point you right to the Rob Paulson episode, because Rob talks about Randy and they're friends and they know each other, and it's a lot of fun. And you'll hear a lot of funny stuff on that Rob Paulson episode. And while you're there, check out, like we mentioned, Bridging the Geekdom, Shooting the Sith, and Fighting Book Forensics, and Nerds from the Crypt, all the other shows we have on there. Great stuff. And all of our reviews and previews and all the other articles we have going up there. And go to the store. Buy a shirt, buy a hoodie, look fly yourself, help support the site, because all that money, if you buy something, all that money goes back into paying for the site. You know, we don't, right now, everything just goes back into making the site better, making the shows better, and kind of up, making us go up. So definitely go and help support all the shows on the network and all the stuff that we do.
Yeah. Definitely keep us in mind for holiday season t-shirts.
Yes.
And stuff like that. And also just like and review and share those episodes around. Let's get it out to as many people as possible, and tell us what you think. I love hearing people tell us about the show that, you know, we don't know. It's always really fun to hear those.
Yeah, feedback, good, positive or negative feedback or neutral feedback, we'll take it all.
If you think I suck, let me know. I'll take it.
We'll cry. We'll definitely cry about it, but we'll take it.
I might curse.
I'll curse and cry at the same time.
So.
But also, go to scpod.us/discord. Join our public Discord server. Come and chat with us. We'd love you to join there. We're going to be doing giveaways and contests here in a little bit. I think we've got a holiday thing coming up pretty soon, so you want to get in on that. So once again, scpod.us/discord. Now, Casey, there's just one thing left to do. Let's see if we can actually do it this time right. If not, that's fine. You ready?
Let's do this.
In Ocean's a podcast.
We are Cthulhu.
And as Cthulhu compels you to do,
open your mind
and read more.